Welcome to the first ever episode of Dating Games, the Modern Relationships Podcast. I'm your host, Bobby Temps. There is also another host who you'll see from the cover artwork called Danielle Hogan. I'll be here for the weekly interviews with funny guests talking all about their unique approach to relationships, and Danielle will join me once a month as we deep dive into many of the themes that are raised. This first interview was actually recorded back in 2019, a year that was very stressful at the time. I do kind of miss at this point. Hopefully it's a chance for us to all reminisce about a time before the pandemic, when dating was still complicated, but complicated in one less way. Don't worry, I have received many questions already about this, and it's something that initially we put off release when the lockdown started, and then soon realised this would be something talked about for years to come in relation to relationships. So perhaps it's better to launch in the middle of it than be talking about it all in hindsight. And we're starting with a brilliant guest. Maisie Adam is a comedian and previous winner of So You Think You're Funny. It's a newcomer comedy competition previously won by the likes of Aisling B, Peter Kay and Lee Mack. I've got to see Maisie perform twice back when that was still a thing you could do, so was delighted to welcome her as our first ever guest in what became our pilot episode. We really hope you enjoy it. Thank you so much for tuning in to Dating Games.
Hello, I'm Maisie Adam, and gosh, awkward dates, like where do you even start with that? I'd say like the most awkward ones probably happened earliest on, like when I first started dating people, because you've not got any practice, have you? So you don't know what, like how to go about it. I just remember, I must have been about 17, and we were really good friends. Me and my friendship group were really good friends with the year above because they were all into drama as well. It was sort of like, think a really awkward British glee club. It was like that. And we went to our friend Tim's 18th birthday. And basically we were just dead excited because it was an 18th. So we knew there'd be alcohol and all of this. And like, we were having like really great time at this party. And I met this guy and we got chatting. It was very like cool, very like quite flirty. I was really awkward in high school, by the way, so like I did not have any boyfriends at high school, like anything like that. So like suddenly there was this guy at Tim's birthday who was from another school, from somewhere on the outskirts of Leeds, like no mutual friends, but was taking quite an interest. So it was exciting and all that. Mm-hmm. So we swapped, I was going to say swapped numbers, I think we actually swapped BBMs. Do you remember on your BlackBerry BBM chat? And we arranged to go on a date, like, the next week. And he was a couple, he was, like, I was maybe 17 and he was 18. Yeah, he was 18. And he picked me up in his car, which, first of all, I was like, this guy's really cool. And then we were just sort of, like, chatting in the car. And we pulled up to this car park that was in the town where I live, which I knew was the car park to his cinema. And I assumed that's where he was going, because he was like, oh, we'll go see a film. I was like, great. We got out of the car and I found ourselves just sort of walking to the train station. And I was like, what's going on here? Like, why aren't we just going to the Odeon here? We got onto the train and he was like, yeah, we're going to go.
And so you didn't ask him at any point?
Well, I said, like, we're going to a film. He was like, yeah. And he was like, it's at the View, though. And the View is in, like, Leeds city centre. And I was like, oh, right, OK. Maybe it's a really arty film that, like, the Odeon doesn't show or whatever. And we got on there. And on the train, he just suddenly was like, do you have any tattoos? And I was like, no, I don't. And it was really apparent he was keen on showing me his. Like, you know when somebody asks you a question because they want to be asked that question in reverse. So I was like, no, I don't. Do you? He's like, yeah, I've actually just got this new piece. And he lifted up his shirt on the train, like in front of everybody else, and he had a Pitbull lyric, like, as in the Latin American rapper, and it said, let's do it tonight because we might not get tomorrow.
Jesus.
And I was like, I don't even know what you... So I sort of just, you know...
Like, I love Pitbull. I find
Pitbull.
Him hilarious.
But
would I ever have him tattooed on me?
Also, of all the lyrics to show on a first date, the one that says, let's do it tonight because we might not get tomorrow, I was a little bit like...
I guess it's clear, at least.
Well, yeah, his intentions were certainly clear. So I said, you know, oh, that's lovely. I made some bollocks up, like, oh, the colour
very
is
pretty.
Really nice. Yeah, it's so symmetrical. And then we got to Leeds... And we went to the View, and the film was a film that was definitely showing at the Odeon one. And I was like, what's going on? I was like, so we were chatting as we were getting things. And I was like, so why leave? And he was like, what do you mean? I was like, well, why don't we just go to the Odeon where you park the car? And he just genuinely didn't know that that was a cinema car park. He just parked there, then we'd got the train. And so then he got in like a really bad mood because he had spent money on car park, parking his car in the Harrogate Odeon and then the train fare. And then he was like, all right. And he was listing all of the things he bought. So he was like, so maybe you want to get your ticket. And I was like, okay. Like, and by the way, I'm definitely championing like splitting the bill on all dates, love that. But like, if you're gonna list all of the things that you have bought and then insinuate that the other person should buy, I was just a little bit like, you could have just checked if there was an Odeon near where we were.
Or just ask you if you'd mind. He doesn't need to list everything.
Yeah, just do a little inventory of all of the things he'd bought. Anyway, we then went into the film. I can't even remember what the film was, but it can't have been life-changing because I just don't remember it. But we were sat there and we didn't, you know, sometimes on a date, like you might hold hands or something. There was no chemistry at all. We were just sat there. I think he was, to be honest, still doing the mental maths in his head of how much he was out of pocket from this date. And I was just like still having flashbacks to the Pitbull tattoo that he got out on the train. So we both just sort of sat there for about an hour and a half, 2 hours in silence, staring straight ahead. Credits came up at the end, lights came up. And he was like, did you enjoy it? I was like, yeah, it was good. He was like, cool. And then like, it was just really, really quite off. And we came out afterwards and he was like, do you want to go for a drink? So he clearly is having quite a nice time. And I was like, as I say, now, by this point on any day, I would have just been like, no, I think I'm going to go home. Mm. But I was like, this was maybe the first or second date I'd ever been on. So yeah, he goes, oh, do you want to go for a drink? I was like, yeah, sure. He then goes back to we're still in like the big view complex. He just goes back up to the popcorn and drink stall and gets like two drinks from the popcorn. Like, so they're not alcoholic. He just gets like another, I think he'd had a Tango Ice Blast and I'd had a Coke. And we just sat in the sort of chairs in the waiting area.
You made the wrong choice of drink.
I think I made the wrong choice of man. But we then just sat there. And like, you've seen those big empty spaces in the foyer of a cinema. They're very soulless. So I think we were just sat next to like a big cutout of that film. Was it The Expendables or something? The one with, right, like Sylvester Stallone and Ben Stiller, like all of that lot. And we were just sat there making really rubbish chat. And the worst thing was, is I was like, I can't even just excuse myself and go because I have to get the train back and he needs to get the train back. Because, you know, I can't be like, I'm going to go back and get the train because he would have to do it as well. So we just sort of got our way through these drinks, then got the train back. And then obviously had to walk to his car and then it was like the most long-winded date ever. Like it was a proper shift. Like it felt like I'd really done some sort of community service by the end of it.
You earned all the things you paid for.
Honestly, I felt like I was going to get an invoice at the end of it. But yeah, it was not a good date. And I think he didn't hear from him, obviously. Like I think we both came out of it a bit like in a bad mood, which was so ridiculous. But then like a week later, he would suddenly BBM me. It was the usual things of like past 11 o'clock at night, you'd get a BBM from him and you're like, okay, cool. You're just a little bit lonely and you want someone to come and stroke your pit bull tattoo. Like, and it's not going to be me. Yes, I'm sure it would have led to one. So yeah, that was maybe the worst one. But I think I was so awkward in it, and like as I say, if that happened now, an hour whether or not you're feeling something, and you can make your excuses. But back then, you were just like, I don't know, dates normally last several hours. I've still got a way to go with this, and you just sort of feel like you've got to make an effort with them. Like I've been on dates with really rude guys before, and you've just thought, right, well, sack this off. Like I would never have put in the hours that I put in on that first one before. Like now,
yeah. Absolutely, but that's it. We're kind of taught you have to be nice to everyone when you're a child.
Yeah, and you feel like, also, like, you know yourself, when you go on a date, you're being a version of yourself. And sometimes you can panic and say a funny, like, thing or whatever. So you kind of try to give the benefit of the doubt with that other person. Be like, okay, they're just as nervous as me. Like, maybe they're not normally this weird. I don't know. Like, I always laugh about, so my boyfriend Mike, when we went on our first date, we found out that his parents basically holiday in the same place that me and my family would holiday growing up. And it was like this beach in France, and the city is called Royan, and then there's like a little beach near there. And I was like, oh my God, yeah, we always used to go to Royan. There's a really good beach near there called Pontiac. And I went to say the waves are really good for bodyboarding. But at the last minute, I thought bodyboarding is not very cool, like, because it's just those little foam boards that you put and lie on your belly on. So I last minute just went, the waves are really good there for surfing. And he was like, oh my God, you surf? And I was like, yeah, I've never surfed in my life. And I was like, yeah. He's like, oh God, how long have you surfed and all this? I was like, oh, you know, haven't done it for a few years, but once you've got it, it never really leaves you, to be honest. You know, I could still do the odd sort of...
surf thing.
Yeah, riding those gnarly waves. And then I think about like a month or two into our relationship, I was like, oh, by the way, I've never surfed in my life. Like, I think everybody panics on a first date in some way and can sort of mess up.
I do it a lot with when people tell me like bands, and you can tell they've thought of the coolest band they can. And I'm like, yeah, feather them.
Yeah.
Love their stuff.
Uh-huh. Yeah. What's your favourite album? The first one. That was a good one. That one. Yeah, that's definitely... And like, everybody does that as well. They try to be more cool than they actually are. You'd say that you're into... Like, I love like all types of music. But I am an unashamedly big fan of pop music. Like, and I hate the snobbery around it of people like going, oh, it's so mainstream. Well, yes, that's why it's popular. Because it fits into a formula that ticks with everyone. And that's a really cool thing. But like also like loads of sort of more indie music. But on a first date, I'm always giving it the like, yeah, I just really like sort of like old fashioned, you know, like... Music's not the same as it was in like the 60s, 70s, when actually like the next concert I'm going to is a Little Mix one next week. Do you know what I mean? Like it's everybody tries and cool themselves. And it's silly really, isn't it? Because you should actually just be yourself. Like sometimes I've been on dates where somebody is being so cool, you start to think they're too cool for me. Whereas if they maybe said something like, oh, I'm going to a Little Mix, you're like, oh, they're... Or I bodyboard. Oh my God, I do too. Do you know what I mean?
That's interesting because I try and like really balance myself out. So because I have multiple jobs, and because I'm quite high powered, people can find that intimidating.
Right.
So then I try and choose, okay,
tone it down.
Which side of my work am I going to talk about first?
Yeah.
And then I kind of drip feed it. And then if I feel that sometimes I can tell where they're just like not interested in replying to certain questions, like I'll be, you know, texting someone who I've met online, and every time I ask them what they've been up to, they don't tell me.
Yeah.
They just flip the question back and I'm like, ah, you're feeling like your stuff doesn't compare.
So then
I feel I need to like insert like stupid anecdotes of when I've embarrassed myself to kind of bring me down
it's,
to
it's
earth.
It's like such a, it's a game of gauging, isn't it really?
Yeah.
Of like gauging where the other person's at with all of that stuff. And I think as well, like it's just a funny sort of, especially in online, saying what you do because you don't really get the chance to fully expand on it, that can sometimes be... I've only been doing comedy 3 years, and before Mike, my boyfriend, I think I'd gone, like, I was dating, but we never really got round to like talking explicitly about what I do.
Right.
So I would say like, oh, I work in the arts or something like that, and I write and all of this. But often as well, I was having day jobs, so I would really talk about the day job.
Okay.
And the last sort of relationship I had before Mike, he was a teacher, so he was working 9 to 5, and I was just starting to do comedy. And when you're at the like start of that, you have to do, like with any job, you have to really graft and do the stuff that isn't paying very well. And you have to go really sort of... I was turning up to these really rubbish gigs to do 5 minutes on a lineup with 18 other comics.
Wow.
You know, I was getting the mega bus down to London to do 5 minutes in a pub in Stockwell to then come back up and do my day job the next day. And so, but because I wanted it so much, really wanted to do comedy, like more than anything else, I didn't ever feel like I should apologise for that. It was what I wanted to do. And the same way this guy spoke about passionately being a PE teacher, I would passionately talk about wanting to be a stand-up. And it got to a point, and I can totally understand it, but it got to a point where he only has evenings off and I am basically giving up all of my evenings.
Yeah.
And from his perspective, seemingly for no reward or money or, you know, anything like that. So he, like, we sort of ended it because he was kind of being a bit, he would get a bit moody if I cancelled plans because I had a gig that would come through, and I'd be like, but the headline act is this person, and if they like my stuff, then maybe they could give me a tour support thing. And, I don't regret it at all, because God, like, knowing my schedule now, you could never date somebody. I could never date a PE teacher now. I just wouldn't ever see them. But it's definitely something that after that, I became quite wary of telling people, because they could just go straight away in their head, oh, well, this isn't going to work out. If I've got a 9 to 5 and you're out in the evenings, like, I'm going to see you once in a blue moon.
And that makes sense, because that's a lot of online relationships, as these assumptions about people that you don't want someone to write you off.
Absolutely.
Just because of one bit of information.
Just because of one bit. And also, like, the moment you say that you're a comedian, that it's, and understandably, they're like, okay, tell us a joke. Or they're like, okay, what have I seen you on? You know, and immediately they expect you to be like, oh yeah, I've been on Live at the Apollo. But at that point, like, I think when I first met Mike, I think I just said, oh, I write comedy. So I write, and which is true, but I sort of held back on the, and I also perform it. It was more like I write, and at the time I was writing for a few other, like, smaller projects, but I didn't really expand on the performance side of it.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, because it is understandable that people ask you questions like that.
Yeah,
but it's
exactly.
Very direct. You wouldn't turn around to the teacher and say, oh, well, what was the Ofsted rating of your department?
Talk me through a lesson plan. Go.
Yeah.
You just wouldn't.
It is a real way of them sussing out how successful you are, in which, with other careers, that would be like, all right, what's your salary?
And their taste as well. Yes, exactly. And their taste as well is, if you say, I'm a comedian, they immediately are like, yeah, but what type of comedian? And they a lot of the time, like, when I've said it before, a lad will be like, oh, what? So are you sort of like Peter Kay, or are you like Michael McIntyre, or you, like, do you know what I mean? And you're like, well, you know, there's no way to answer that, really.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm like Michael McIntyre. That's why I'm...
We're exactly the same.
Yeah. So it's a difficult one, because they, also with their taste as well, you don't know sometimes what kind of... I've said it before, and they've gone, oh, yeah, I really like this joke. And they tell a joke, and it's like, that uses three words that we are not supposed to say anymore. Like, they'll tell you, like, a Roy Chubby Brown joke, and you're like, okay. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, it's just, no, I get that.
Whereas you wouldn't get that with, if you said, oh, what do you do? And this person said, oh, I'm a plumber. You wouldn't worry, because that person's not going to have a particular taste on what sort of plumbing they like. Do you know what I mean?
Exactly.
Whereas you're immediately putting yourself out there in a vulnerable position, going, yes, I do this thing that you might think is absolute dog shit, but other people will think is really good. And I don't know which one you are.
And also there's that power imbalance of, they can go away and look you up.
Oh, God, that's the worst. That is the worst, which Mike did.
So how did you meet Mike?
He runs a cocktail bar. Right. And I was on a night out with my friends from up north. I'd just moved to Brighton. And we went into this bar. And, like, my friends were sort of saying, like, oh, you keep looking over at the bar and all of this. Like, I did fancy him. And then he sort of was coming over to, like, clear the glasses and chat, and be like, you're having a good night and all of this. And basically his bar works where your phone connects to the jukebox. So all of the music that's played in this bar is selected by the customers who have chosen it on their phone.
That's nice. Sounds like a bit of a risk. But...
Yeah, I know. So we'd all put, like, our songs on, and Liv's had come on and Steph's had come on, and then mine hadn't come on for ages. And I'll be honest, I was about 4 gin and tonics deep when he came over again. And he was like, oh, you having a good night? And I was like, no, my song hasn't come on. Like, quite sort of argy. And he was like, oh, well, what song is it? I said, it's the Rolling Stones' Satisfaction. Again, trying to look way more cool than I actually am. And he went, well, that's why it's not come on, isn't it? Like, really sassy, and then, like, walked off. And I was like, oh, my God, like, who's this sassy guy? And then he put Cher on, and I was like, oh, God, like, maybe I'm barking up the wrong tree. I don't know. Do you know what I mean? I was like, I don't know what's going on here. And then we sort of carried on flirting, like, in this weird passive-aggressive way throughout the evening, and then swapped numbers. And that weekend we went for a drink on Brighton Seafront, which is when the whole surfing fiasco happened.
Right.
And we met at something like 1 in the afternoon, and we stayed there until it got, like, until literally the sun went in, so about 5-6 o'clock, and then went for pizza and drinks. And it was about 11 o'clock by the time he walked me home. So we'd been on, like, a date that was, like, 12 hours long.
That's pretty intense.
So it was, yeah, I was like, okay, that's... And it felt like half an hour, whereas that one at the Odeon, with Mr. Pitbull was maybe, I don't know, 4 hours and felt like 4 years. So yeah, it was pretty intense. And like, I think when you spend that amount of time with somebody and you know it's like you're really enjoying each other's company, you know that there's probably something there. But yeah, the next time I saw him, it was either the next time or the third date, he said like, oh yeah, I've watched your stuff on YouTube. And literally, I have never wanted the ground to like swallow me up more. I was just, you just suddenly feel so exposed yeah. and vulnerable. And it's, I don't know what it says about you if you suddenly start to feel quite almost apologetic about it. Like all the stuff on YouTube I'm proud of, like they're good, they're there's a set that won me a competition. There's a set that, you know, like I absolutely had a lovely gig and a really nice.
But it's an opportunity for him to judge you and yeah. you hadn't consented to that.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And you suddenly feel, yeah, you don't need his approval. You don't need him to go, and I thought you were really funny. I mean, thankfully he did say that. But
at the same time, you'd struggle to date him if you thought you were shite.
Oh my God. If he'd have turned around and was just like, yeah, I saw your YouTube stuff. Anyway, I would have literally been like, oh my goodness, I'm going to Uber my way out of this gig right now. And that's definitely something I was always really sort of quite worrying about. Like after that first date, because it went so well and I was like, I really, really like him. I was a bit like, God, it's only a matter of, he knows my name. All you have to type in is sort of, and especially because my name, Maisie, it's not that common. So I can't remember if he'll have known my last name at that point, but even just to put Maisie Comedian into YouTube, it would have come up. So I was a little bit like, oh God, has he seen it already? Like, you just don't know. Mm. And you don't have that with any other job. You wouldn't, as you say, be a teacher or a plumber and be like, God, have they looked at my Ofsted rating? Have they looked at my...
With my other podcast, because it's mental health.
Yes, of course, yeah.
If people listen to that, it can kind of change the dynamic quite a bit.
Really?
So I tend to not talk about that initially, because what I found is if I do, then they can kind of pigeonhole me as, oh, you just talk about mental health, right. That's all you do. And either that's a thing of, like, they might have some stigma, and so they're then wary of me, is he analysing me constantly? Or they might go completely the other way and be like, here's all my trauma for you.
Can you be my therapist, please? Yeah. Yeah, it's one of the, you're either their therapist or you're like walking baggage.
And actually, all it is that's one of the things I do. It's something I can speak about.
Yeah.
But it's just a part of me.
Yeah.
In the same way, you're not a comedian 24/7.
No. And Mike will 100% testify to that. There's a lot of stuff that I say. I'll just be like, yeah, maybe don't try that on stage. And I think especially with online now, it's a lot more, you feel like you've got to sort of advertise. And this doesn't just apply to dating, but even if we look at like Instagram, everyone's putting a version of themselves out there that isn't maybe as authentic as we, in all honesty, are. And I think that definitely translates to the dating apps. And I don't know if that's a bad thing or not, because for years and years, before the internet and all of this, lot, people have gone on dates and tried to be something they're not. So unless you're doing a full-on MTV catfish, I think what's wrong in just trying to make yourself the best?
It makes sense, but I think it can feel very impersonal. Like if we compare it to when people would like meet at a dance, and obviously they'd get dressed up and they'd try and present the same best version of themselves, but it wasn't a case that someone sat in bed with a hangover just decline them.
Yes, that whole culture as well of just sort of seeing one flaw in someone and it immediately being a left. Like, that's quite scary. That's quite... Because as you say, if we're talking about when you used to go meet at dances or whatever, you'd have to get to know that person before that flaw presented themselves. And I guess, like, the Pitbull thing. If I saw this bloke on Tinder now and saw that tattoo straight away, I would have swiped left. And I don't know if that makes me a terrible person... But I would have, like, personal choice.
I don't think it does, but you're just judging on the information you have.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas, had this guy with the tattoo had that connection that me and Mike had on the first date, and then we got that to see that tattoo, it would have been, it could have been a different, so I could have been like, oh God, that's, no offence, but that's really awful. But, you know.
He might see the funny side of it, and then you can have a laugh.
And if you're having a really good time and you're getting on really well, and then you could sort of, like, you feel a bit more comfortable showing the flaws, but... Yes, the point is, I think that was a that would have been a swipe left that date anyway. Personality, chemistry, tattoos aside, it was a no from the get-go, I think. But yeah, we live in a weird time, I think, at the moment, where we're quite dismissive straight away of anything that's not the boxes that we're looking to tick.
Mm. And I know one thing you've talked about in your comedy is your height.
Yes.
Does that factor into this?
Oh, so this is a this is such a... I feel... Because I do see lads talk about this, saying, like, the sort of memes that go around it, being like, you know, girls will be like, has to be over 5'10" or whatever, when, you know, they've got all of these flaws. And I get it. And for me, it's not just...
If we could quickly pause there, I don't know if you've come across this, but when I've hijacked the Tinder accounts of straight female friends, there's a barrage of men that will have a list of requirements.
Oh, God, yeah.
And they'll look disgusting. Yeah. And I don't know what that is.
that is, yes.
Or they'll, like, list requirements that they clearly aren't meeting themselves.
So I'm kind of a little bit like, well, yeah, maybe I can request, actually. I think you'll find that I date a bloke of a certain height when you're listing all of these things. But the thing is, I think a lot of guys see it as, you don't think I'm good enough just because of my height. And I can't speak for anybody else, but with me, and I fully acknowledge this, it's that I feel self-conscious if I date a man who is smaller.
You feel that you're the odd one.
I feel big, and I feel sort of... And I think with any other sort of body shapes or sizes, you would... You could say if I was a big woman, I don't think you would, you wouldn't be outraged if I said, well, I only want to date a man who's bigger than me or something like that. I think sometimes you just, because of what your own admittedly insecurities are or how you feel comfortable within a two-person dynamic, mm-hmm. you look for a certain type aesthetically. And so I feel big and cumbersome and sort of taller and lankier than I am if I'm going on a date with a small man, and if that's terrible of me, then fine. But it's not that I don't find that man attractive. They can 100% be. Like, I've seen profiles before where I'm like, he's really, really attractive. But I know the whole time that I would be out with that guy, I would be feeling really, really self-conscious. So it's 100% on me. It's not that men under 5'10" are unattractive. So that whole myth that boys put out of, like, women are so hung up on height. Well, yeah, we are, but, like, it's nothing to do with you. Like, I'm sure you're great and I'm sure you're really attractive. I just wouldn't feel comfortable. The last, like, serious relationship I had before Mike, he was the same height as me. And that was fine. But any sort of, like, engagement where you might have to dress up and wear heels or something, right. I was so sort of, like, conscious the whole time. Like, all the photos, I would sort of look... Because he was a big guy... and just my height, whereas I'm sort of a tall, slim woman. So we did, I just thought we often looked quite in photos on a night out. And I can hear myself say that, and I know that if I was listening to this, I'd be like, why is she so bothered about what other people
no,
think?
No, I totally
but you,
get it.
But you do, you just feel
but
conscious
also,
about some things. You
this
do.
Comes back to something very natural in dating, is that you want to feel comfortable with that person.
That's it, yeah.
And people are going to judge you whatever way, and people have responded to your height in the past. So you want to look like a fit with this person.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I like that when, you know, me and Mike are walking around together or in bed or having a cuddle on the sofa, like, he's a bigger presence, a bigger person mm-hmm. than me. I don't know, I'm not a psychologist, I don't know what the mindset is behind that or whatever, but I know that it happens a lot in two-person relationships. You have a sort of a role that you want to be within that two-person. I was chatting to Rosie Jones. She came on our podcast the other day, and she was saying how she... So Rosie is 5'4", maybe, I think. I feel like she might even be shorter than that. But she was saying that her type is dark hair and shorter than her, petite. So I was like, bloody hell. And we were laughing, saying, like, you're really narrowing it down there because you're so short. Like, you're really narrowing it down. But she was saying, like, anything... you know, taller than her, she sort of feels like she's looked after by that, you know, she doesn't like that,
right.
Which I can understand with Rosie. You want to feel, you know, as independent and as not needing assistance from somebody in that dynamic. So yeah, the whole height thing, particularly with men and women, I think it's particularly seen as a problem in straight relationships, because the man feels, when they see women saying like, oh, you know, 5'10 or over. I never had 5'10 or over in my profile, but I did say that I was 5'10.
Right.
Because I thought then, God, it's only when you say it out that you're like, oh my God, we're all so guilty.
I think I've got the way to reframe this for you. I think it is completely understandable what you're saying, but this is also part of online dating.
Yeah.
That you have the opportunity to search for something aesthetically narrow, because you can't be like, okay, somebody with a personality that I will get on with. There's no way to filter for that.
Yeah.
So in lieu of that, you do find yourself looking for certain things.
That you've hit the nail on the head.
And it's not to say that you couldn't meet someone and really get along with them, but if you're chalking up your dream man, that just happens to be one of the things.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I get it, because I even get it sometimes myself. I date people of all genders.
Yeah.
But I'm 6'3".
Right.
I've never been with anyone taller than me.
No.
And sometimes I think about that, like when I saw your set and you talked about wanting to just once sit on a man's lap and look small and cute.
Yeah.
And, you know, sometimes I think that once I'd like to...
but yeah, it's just that sort of thing of like feeling like the, I don't know. Some people want to feel like the very dominant and like caretaker person in a relationship, and other people.
And I'm generally pretty happy with that role.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think the sort of pretense that people don't like to have those sorts of roles, whichever they are, is silly. Like, we do. We like to be one or the
other.
But
also, that's how we're brought up. Can also, you see that
that's
in
the
your
thing
parents
as well. And that's what I'm sort of tapping into with these straight relationships. I think men sort of, if they see that a woman is looking for a man over a specific height, they can feel quite emasculated and like, oh, so I'm not man enough for you because of something I can't help, because I'm not tall. It's not that you're not man enough, it's just that I would feel really quite cumbersome.
And that's
next
it. It's,
to you. And
it's
I
about
want to feel
you,
comfortable. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you. It's a funny one. We went to a wedding a couple of weekends ago.
Maybe it's easier for me to say because I'm tall, I'm less offended.
But like, we went to a wedding a couple of weeks ago and I was wearing heels and Mike was in like these brogues. So I was a little bit taller than him and we were stood in the church and I kept, he was like, Mike sometimes has really bad posture and he's not really religious or that comfortable in a church. So I think he was quite sort of like hunched over anyway. And I was like, stand up straight. And he was like, what? I was like, stand up straight. And I was sort of having to like lean onto one hip. He turned to me and he was like, what are you doing? Like, I'm fine. Like, it's you that's got there. And I was like, yeah, I know. But can you just help me be comfortable, please, by standing up straight? And I'm going to sort of sit on one hip that makes me a little bit smaller. And I realised completely how stupid I was being and like, how, you know, I'm asking somebody to stand up more straight than they feel comfortable doing because I'm feeling uncomfortable about the fact that I've worn a pair of shoes that I've chosen to wear that have made me taller than a bloke who is already sufficiently tall enough for me to be dating him. But it's just, it's people have their insecurities and
And also your career is about how am I going to come across to people?
Yes.
So I guess you're acutely aware of other people's perception to a whole different level.
Yes. And I think sometimes as a, I hate the
as
term
female
comedian. I hate it. And you can probably see me there trying to work out how else as a woman in comedy, I don't know. But often as the only female on a lineup, you're aware that you go out and the crowd are not often expecting another man to come on. And you come out and you're a woman, but you're not a petite, cute little woman in a dress. You're a 5'11" woman in jeans and a top. And you're not talking about just the female experience. You're talking about, like, having... I mean, it's
about
not that
life,
this should be
really.
Not that this should be groundbreaking, but the fact that you're independent and the fact, you know, and as you say, life. I'm not coming on and talking about being a housewife. I'm coming on and just talking about all of the things those blokes have just spoken about, but as me. And so sometimes you're conscious of that because you want to be able to talk about those things, but you're also conscious that these blokes are seeing that and immediately can sometimes sort of get their back up about it and be like, and again, not all men, but
even everyone, because we're
because
all taught by society that women are supposed to be the pretty ones. And I have a theory on this with gender and comedians, that for men, they seem to have the option to kind of opt out
Yes.
Of being attractive on stage, that there's plenty of them that just wear the same, you know, jeans and a t-shirt every time. And then people see them and straight away think, oh, they've not really made an effort.
Yeah.
And that's that.
Yeah.
Or the ones that do dress up, they can then be judged accordingly. Mm-hmm. Whereas as a woman, you come out and your appearance is judged whether you've made an effort or not.
Yeah, straight away. Yeah, I think that's definitely true. Also, the whole thing about, and I don't have a problem with it because a lot of them are very funny, but a male comedian can come on and do dick jokes straight away and everyone's on board, whether or not they've got a dick. A woman to come out and talk about her nanny or any part of actually the female anatomy or any side of it, sex, periods, anything like that. God, the amount of times I go, all women talk about as comics is their period or boobs or it's just all about women's stuff. You're like, are you joking? How many cock jokes have I, you know, sat through in backstage and just listened to before I go on? And that's not anything against cock jokes. Some of them are really, really funny. Some of them are absolute dog shit.
I even see a mic go below kind of chest height and I'm just assuming it's going to be a dick.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's a lot more. A woman has to warm the audience really up quite a lot before she can talk about those things a lot of the time. Thankfully, there's some comedians like Jen Brister and Helen Bauer who just come straight away and talk about it. And if you don't like it, that's on you for not being comfortable with a woman talking about her period in 2019. I think that's what, like, you need a bit more of, to be honest, because you never have to apologize. I've never seen a bloke have to go, oh, sorry, you're not ready for me to talk about my dick. Oh, sorry, I'll just do a bit more opposite. No, they come out and just do it regardless. So there is all of that stuff as well. Yeah. I don't know how we got onto that. Dick jokes.
No, that's fine. We were talking about you being more aware of other people's judgment.
Yes, and the things you sort of have to overcome as soon as you're on stage that maybe a bloke doesn't have to.
How have you found your relationship now and having been in it for a substantial amount of time? How has that changed your outlook?
I'd say it's quite scary a lot of the time. Like, you can probably hear in my voice, I'm already getting a little bit like, ugh. I had like a reputation in my friendship group as the proper like commitment phobe. So I was very like, as you've probably picked up in this podcast, but the moment there was even a small red flag or a small thing that I was like, no, I'd just be like, cut off. Thank you. Next. Like, on to the next one. Well, not even on to the next one. I loved being single. A lot of people don't really like it. I absolutely adored it.
I love it.
Just do what you want with your time. And I was sort of this perception that if that was to ever change, if I was going to not be single, it would have to be for somebody who wasn't always like pissing me off or was that. But like, it's true. I have so many of my friends who have constantly got a problem in their relationship. And you just think, is the idea of being single that bad that you'd rather put up with this?
Right.
This stuff that you shouldn't have to put up with. So I was really sort of quite, and I'm very good in my own company, very happy in my own company. So I was very like, if I ever do get into a relationship, or if somebody is going to come along, it has to be somebody that like isn't going to give me all these reasons
constant
to just
anger.
Think, yeah. And I don't think that's a lot to ask, but I think we should be able to go, no, if you want me to spend my time with you, you should be not a dickhead. Like, you should be somebody that is enjoyable to spend time with. And I don't feel like I'm constantly having to put in the effort. It should just be an easy thing.
I totally agree. Because that's all I'm looking for at this point.
Absolutely.
I want someone that is no drama.
Well, that's the thing. And I've got so many mates who've, like, they're always having to put in the effort and they're always having to accommodate to somebody else's, like, dickish behaviour and fit their life around theirs. And I just think life's too short for that. You've got to be able to live the life that you want to and, like, not have to compromise that because somebody else isn't happy with, like, you being happy, basically, and sort of bring it down. And so I was very, like, not really looking for a relationship when I met Mike. And now we've been together a year and a half, and it's scary because it's amazing. But I'll just say that because I know he'll listen to this. It's amazing. But it's sort of scary because it's the first time I've ever been... I've been in love before, but it's the first time I've been with someone where I know that that's the person I'd like to be with for the rest of my life. And that's That's like, I'm literally getting terrified just saying that. It's so scary. It's a scary thought. But it's nice to have met someone where those, like, I've not felt like I've had to compromise anything. And as we've discussed, I've got a job that's quite a demand for a partner, I think, to have. Like, I'm home tomorrow, but I've been away for a week, so I've not seen him for a week. Next year I'm going to Australia for 2 months. Like, and he, every time when I got Australia, if I had said that to the PE teacher or to any of the other lads that I'd ever dated, it would be like, oh God, right, you're going away for that long. Well, how's that going to affect us? And when they say us, they mean me. And I sort of told Mike, and straight away he was like, that's amazing, well done, oh my goodness, smashed it. Like, and that's what you want. So it's very scary because I feel like I've got something that means so much to you that you then become quite sort of protective of it, and you don't want that to go or to lose it at all.
He sounds lovely.
He's
You've really
great.
sold him
No,
to
he's really
me.
great. But in the, like, I still mean this in a really lovely way, but if it did all go tits up tomorrow, I think you want to be somebody who can still live there, and it's, you're not complete, we're not codependent is what I'm saying.
Right, that's
And I think I
important.
see that a lot in some of my friends' relationships where they've broken up and they're like, a whole part of me is gone, I don't know what I'm going to do now. And it's like, but your life should be enough on its own, and then you can share that with somebody else. But like, ultimately, if that person is taken out of the equation, you've still got something that you're really happy with and is incredible with. And I think Mike and I have both got that. Mike is very good at his job. He's very happy. He's got a lovely family. If I went out of the equation, he's still got something to live for, and vice versa. Like, the last breakup I had before Mike, it was because I felt fully responsible for this person's happiness. And that's a lot of a burden to be put on someone. You know, I'm not happy unless I'm with you. That's really, it's too much for someone. I shouldn't be responsible for your. I'm sure you talk about this on mental, but
We do, yeah.
it's about
Putting your
self-care and
happiness
putting
on someone
yourself
else.
first, and you have to be happy within yourself. I feel like I'm going to start quoting RuPaul and the whole, how are you going to love yourself? But it's very,
It's very
I
true.
think what's so lovely about me and Mike is we both love ourselves and both love our lives and are both happy within ourselves enough that just spills into your relationship rather than taking it from the other person and eroding away at that other person's happiness
Right.
because you've not got something in yourself. It's just nice to go out with someone who's got their shit together, is what I'm saying.
That's the same route.
And I'd like to think he thinks the same about me because I believe I have my shit together, she says very confidently.
I'm sure he does. That's a lovely point to end on. The only thing I'd add there is that I think maybe in part because you've spent a long time single at various parts, I think that really helps. It raises your standards, but it also removes that fear of who am I if I'm single?
That's the thing as well. I think everybody's got, or either is, those people who hop from relationship to relationship to relationship, that they sort of start to forget what they are like on their own, and they don't really know who they are on their own or how to cope. So they look for someone else to give that to. I think if you're quite happy in yourself, that's the best version of you, and that's when you're most probably
Attractive.
attractive and suitable to be open to sharing something with somebody else, because you've got yourself together and you're not looking to be fixed. You're not looking to get happiness that you've not got within yourself from somebody else. It's already there, but it's more like, I can share it with this person who's also already got their shit together.
There we go. Very RuPaul to finish
Very
up
RuPaul.
on.
Can you tell I've been binge watching it?
I can. So we'll finish up there. If people want to find out more about you, where should they go
Oh,
online?
yes. Maisie Adam on Twitter, Instagram, and Maisie Adam Comedy on Facebook, I think.
Grand. Thank you so much for
Thanks.
being on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for listening. For bonus content, extended ad-free episodes, and other perks, you can join our Patreon, linked in the episode description. Our show is edited and produced by Pete Mayetta, with music by the brilliant Tessa Violet. Speak to you next Friday. Until then, game well.